Blog Talk Radio.
Radio show with your host, Mike Holt.
Are you tired of the same old thing with our political system? The politicians make all these wonderful promises at election time, and then as soon as they're elected, all those promises disappear. Nothing happens because they are told by the party what to say and what to do and how to vote. Never mind you and me, we the people, we don't count. So, if you are tired of getting more of the same all the time, maybe it's time to consider something different. And that is why I have decided to run for election to the Senate. Once I get in there, if I am elected, I can guarantee you some major changes will happen. Now, our politicians, of course, don't like change. So I'm going to be really stirring them up. But if we don't do something now, when are we going to do it? We have an election coming up within the next 12 months. Are we just going to sit back and wait for more of the same? Or are you going to do something about it? Well, what I suggest you do, first of all, because only Queenslanders can vote for me to the Senate, but if you live in other states, first of all, what your electorate is. Find out who is standing for the Senate in your state. And then ask yourself, do these people stand for and support citizens-initiated referendums? Why should we do that? Well, citizens-initiated referendums would mean that we, the people, have the power to decide how we are governed. Right now, we have no power. We are merely told how to behave once we elect the representative in. Now, I am not going there into Parliament to be a politician. I intend to be a representative of you, the people. I intend to represent all Australians, and I intend to stand for truth, justice, our laws, and the Australian way of life. In other words, I am standing for Australia, not for any political party. Now, we all know we have a problem with Islam. And everybody's wringing their hands and saying, but what can we do? Well, recent surveys, informal surveys I may add, show that a majority of Australians, and by a majority I say somewhere around 75 to 80% of Australians, do not want Islam in our country. But every time we talk to the politicians, they make excuses. Oh, Islam is a religion of peace. Yeah, right. So was Nazism. Come on. It's time for a change. It's time for a real change to our political system, and I intend to be at the forefront of that change. I intend to make our politicians answerable to we the people. Now, of course, Islam is not the only danger we face. But if I'm elected and we get citizens-initiated referendums, we could have a referendum on it. We could ask, do you want Islam to maintain its status as a religion in Australia? Yes or no? If the answer is no, that would finish it. Because then we could bring these people who have been scamming us up on criminal charges. They would be no better than the mafia. We could kick them out. We could kick Islam out, but it depends on you and me, we the people. We need strong representation in Parliament, and I intend to provide that strong representation. We need new leaders, new leadership, people with vision. And I like to think that I have that vision. So if I'm elected, I will submit and or support a bill, if somebody else decides to do it, to amend Section 128 of the Constitution to give all voters the right to initiate referendums. Now, we've already drafted this bill ready to submit to Parliament. How did we do that? Well, Senator John Madigan, 2 years ago, actually submitted a CIR bill to the Senate. It was not accepted by the Oversight Committee. But when they sent it back, they also sent back a raft of suggestions for amending it so that it would be acceptable to the Senate. We worked with those suggestions and we rewrote the bill, so it should now pass through the vetting committee. Once it does that, it gets tabled in Parliament and then we all get to vote. So we will need to change Section 128 of the Constitution so that we get that power. Then we can make our politicians, or our so-called politicians, we need to start electing representatives who are accountable to we the people. Now, I've already spoken to some of the other independent candidates who are standing for election, and they all, to a man, support CIR. Now, as we know, Iceland was able to get over their financial crisis within 2 years because they have CIR. Each Icelandic election offers an average 7 or 8 referendum points that they gladly vote on. We could do something similar in Australia. And don't forget, Australians have this uncommon common sense. And CIR would give voters the power to exercise that common sense and move our nation to political maturity. Right now I look at Australia and I see a very immature nation, one that has lost its way, one that has been shepherded by the wolves away from the path that our forefathers set for us. It's time to restore Australia. And right now, of course, it's time for a song. Here's another take on a classic, Summer in the City by Butthole Surfers.
Like the night.
Restore Australia radio show with your host, Mike Holt. Do you know that your government is lying to you? Well, we all know that anyway, don't we? But they are lying about many things, and one of the most outrageous lies is their claim that local councils are local government. In other words, the third tier of government. They are not. We've already had two referendums to find out if people wanted a third tier of government. Each time, those referendums failed. Why did they fail? Because we the people don't want more government. The 1974 and 1988 referendums made it very clear that we don't want a third tier of government. So what did the state governments do? They have passed laws to give unprecedented powers over citizens to local councils. And to try and cement this into our psyche without our realising what is really going on, the government constantly refers to local councils as local government. The High Court of Australia ruled that state governments could not raise any tax. And of course that's enshrined in the Constitution too. Now this ruling meant that the state excise on fuel, tobacco and alcohol was removed. Didn't bring the cost of fuel down much, did it? Now if you read the Constitution, it can be clearly seen that the authors of the Constitution were not allowing for any parliament other than the federal parliament to impose a tax. Therefore, the only land rates or tax that can be imposed within Australia is one imposed by the federal parliament through the Commissioner of Taxation. So unless we receive a rates notice from the Commissioner of Taxation, it is invalid and unlawful, and you are quite within your rights to refuse to pay. Clearly, in sections 51 and 52 of the Constitution, and from the Constitutional Commission of 1985 to 1988, the power of taxation is held exclusively by the federal parliament. And section 109 of the Australian Constitution states, when a law of the state is inconsistent with a law of the Commonwealth, the latter shall prevail, and the former shall, to the extent of the inconsistency. And yet, state governments are imposing taxes on us through local councils, calling them local governments, and forcing people to pay a tax on the value of their land. That is a land tax. They can call it rates, they can call it whatever they darn well like, but the fact is, rates are a tax, an illegal tax. More and more people are waking up to this, and as we do, more and more people are challenging local councils. Unfortunately, some people in the early days who challenged councils were either forced to pay not only their land taxes or rates, but a fine, or were taken to court by the council and forced to spend thousands of dollars defending themselves. This is how councils work. If they can't get their way, they will take you to court. Well, it's time to stand up and say no. We can do this by uniting. But even better, it would be for us to all unite and push for a revolution by bringing in citizens-initiated referendums. We can do this if we the people stand together. It's up to you. So don't sit back and say, oh, what am I going to do, or it's too hard. If you want your children to grow up in a country that is healthy, happy and prosperous, it is up to us now to stand up to our government, which has become basically a dictatorship of the party system. Things have got to change. People now are standing up together and saying no more. Will you stand with us? I think it's time for Mighty Mo.
Allah, Allah, Allah.
Mighty. strategy worked. The men he sent to the Battle of Badra returned triumphant, despite being outnumbered. They went into battle believing that they would win either way. Now, you may remember, Muhammad told them that if they were killed in battle, they would get 72 virgins in paradise. And if not, well, they would share the spoils. But Muhammad became very angry with the citizens of Mecca because they attacked him over his raid on their caravan. He left in a huff and moved to Medina instead. So let's listen in as he briefs his men on what to do in Medina.
Men, this is Medina. We are among friends here. But if anyone dares refuse to convert to Islam, you may cut off his head. No quarter! As Allah's messenger, I cannot tolerate anyone who does not obey me. Is that understood?
Yes!
Before you go to your new home, I am going to send a sex therapist to interview each of you. I want you to give him your full support. Is that understood?
Where is that?
Oh, hello. It is I, Ahab Ben Dover, the sex therapist.
Oh, yeah. Come on in. Oh, my. What beautiful eyes you have.
Flattery will get you everywhere. Now, did Mighty Mo tell you why I'm here?
Yeah, he did. So, what do you want to ask me?
Well, I want to know what method you use for goat sex.
Oh, I tie her head up close to a date palm and then I take her from behind. The sound of her bleeding really makes it fun.
Oh, thank you, Yucky Kebabby. That is all for now. Is that Omar de Ross? Yes, it is. Come in. Ah. Hey, Ma, how are you today? I've been sent by Mighty Mo to ask you about your sex life. It wasn't me. I tell you, she practically forced me to have sex with... No, 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 no. I'm not interested in your sexual exploits with women. I want to know how you go about goat sex. Oh. For a moment there, I thought I was in trouble. As you know, I work on the banks of the river, hauling up mud to make house bricks, so it's easy for me. I just shove the goat's head and legs in the mud, and I attack her from behind. They can't do a thing, but the squirming is so exciting for me.
Interesting that. Thank you.
Come in. Who are you? What do you want?
It is I, Ahab Ben Dover, the sex therapist. I have come to ask you how you accomplish goat sex.
Well, I stick leg over me right shoulder and a right leg over me left shoulder, and as she stands on her back legs facing me...
What is this? That's very unusual.
Unusual? In what way is that unusual?
Well... Everyone else I have spoken to takes the goat from behind. None of them face the animal like you.
What? You mean no kissing?
And there we will leave you once again. Make sure you tune in next time, listeners, to hear the adventures of...
Mighty Mo!
Welcome back to the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt. I'd like to talk now about halal. Now, if you haven't heard about halal, it is many things. The first thing is, it is a requirement under Islam to slaughter animals a certain way. That is, without stunning, by slicing their throat.
Isn't that a lovely way to die? The poor animal dies in pain and fear, and of course, that pumps adrenaline into the meat, making it taste terrible. This is probably why meat today doesn't taste as good as it did in the earlier days. But it goes a lot deeper than that. Islamic, let's call them scammers, have come up with a way to force us to pay them a fee to eat our food. It's called halal certification. And by forcing us to pay this, we are actually being forced to comply with Sharia law, because that is where this halal thing comes from, Sharia law, under the Quran. It is an Islamic thing. You and I were not brought up Islamic. We were brought up under a Judeo-Christian society. Christianity is the main religion in Australia even today. And even if you are not a Christian, as I am not, it doesn't matter, because we were brought up under the Judeo-Christian traditions. How much is the halal market worth? Well, there are various figures being bandied around. The lowest one I've heard is $700 billion, but that was a few years ago. That figure comes from a Monash University report. That's for Australia only. The total figure worldwide for last year was around $2.8 trillion. That is turnover. That's not the amount of money that Islam made from certification. So it is big business. The abattoir out at Oakey is paying $27,000 a month to have their meat halal slaughtered and certified. The abattoir up in Gympie, Nolan Meats, are paying 80 cents per animal. I have this from his mouth. I've got it on tape. I've recorded it, so he cannot deny it. And he boasted about doubling that figure when he resold the meat. So it's obviously just a money-making scam. It's not just food that is affected, not just meat, but just about everything in the supermarket these days. And when I say just about everything, I mean just about everything. Cadbury's chocolate, Sanitarium Foods, Kraft, Nestle, Coca-Cola, they are all halal certified, and they are hiding it. They don't want you to know, because they know it's wrong. So what happens when they pay this fee? What happens to the money? Well, Muslims are bound by the Quran to donate a portion of their income, that is up to 5% per year, to a mosque or other Islamic charity organization. This is not just a few, this applies to all Muslims, including businesses and their employees. But who are these Islamic charities? Well, Restore Australia has learned that much of this money is donated to groups like Hamas, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamic Food and Nutrition Council of America, and many others. And it has been proved overseas that almost all of them have ties to terrorist groups. If you want to know more about this, just go on to our website, islamforinfidels.com, and search for Buy and Return Halal. Now, mosques collect much of the money from the halal scam, and then they donate it to charities. And we also know that once a mosque grows beyond a certain number of members, it is much more likely to be involved in preaching and supporting terrorism. So by buying halal certified food, we are actually supporting these hate preachers and supporting terrorism. How do we know this? Because police raids in many nations have found terrorist-related documents and equipment. Gavin Bobie, a tireless UK lawyer crusading against mosque development applications, has also unearthed a lot of this information. Now, given the figures we have seen in this article, What is an Islamic Mosque?, which you will also find on islamforinfidels.com, we can say quite clearly that the halal certification scam supports terrorists. It supports terrorism. So here's our idea. We propose that you go out shopping, and every time you go shopping, buy a halal product. Pay for it, take it outside, open the outside packaging a little bit, just tear it slightly, then take it back in with your docket, sales docket, and ask for your money back. They have to give you the money back, because if you're not satisfied with the product for any reason, that is the law. Now, once they do this, once they give back the money, you also give them back the product. They can't put it on the shelves, so they have to throw it away, or they return it to the producer. If enough of us do this, they will lose money, and they are losing money. Cadbury's, in the last 12 months since we've been boycotting them, have lost so much money that they are reducing their chocolates by 50%, unheard of just a couple of years ago. They have laid off 80 of their staff. They closed down their Tasmanian factory over Christmas 2014 because they had too much stock. We are hurting them, so keep up the pressure. Buy halal and return. Go to our website, islamforinfidels.com, and you will find all the information you need there. This is a new segment in the show called Readings from the Quran. We'll read one verse out each week. The Quran contains at least 109 verses that call Muslims to war with non-believers for the sake of Islamic rule. Some are quite graphic, with commands to chop off heads and fingers and kill infidels wherever they may be hiding. Muslims who do not join the fight are called hypocrites and warned that Allah will send them to hell if they do not join the slaughter. This is the nature of Islam. Our first text today is the Quran, Surah 2, verses 191 to 193. And kill them wherever you find them, and turn them out from where they have turned you out. And al-fitna, which means disbelief or unrest, is worse than killing. But if they desist, then lo, Allah is forgiving and merciful. And fight them until there is no more fitna, and worship is for Allah alone. But if they cease, let there be no transgression except against az-zaliman, the polytheists and wrongdoers, etc. This is a translation from the Noble Quran, the book written by God himself, according to the Muslims. Now, the verse prior to this, verse 190, refers to fighting for the cause of Allah, those who fight you, leading some to believe that the entire passage refers to a defensive war. The historical context of this passage is not defensive warfare, however, since Muhammad and his Muslims had just relocated to Medina and were not under attack by their Meccan adversaries. In fact, the verses urge offensive warfare, in that Muslims are to drive Meccans out of their own city, which they later did. And verse 190 thus means to fight those who offer resistance to Allah's rule, in other words, Muslim conquest. The use of the word persecution by some Muslims translators is disingenuous. The actual Arabic word for persecution, ittihad, and oppression, a variation of ZLM, do not appear in the verse. The word used instead, fitna, can mean disbelief or the disorder that results from unbelief or temptation. This is certainly what is meant in this context, since the violence is explicitly commissioned until religion is for Allah. In other words, unbelievers desist in their unbelief. Think about that. We keep hearing about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that was signed in 1948. But how many of you have read it? Well, I'm not going to read the whole thing out on air. It is available on our website, restoreaustralia.org.au. And I'm going to read the preamble and part of the preamble and sections in it. So the preamble begins, "Whereas recognition of the inherent dignity and of the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family is the foundation of freedom, justice and peace in the world. Whereas disregard and contempt for human rights have resulted in barbarous acts which have outraged the conscience of mankind, and the advent of a world in which human beings shall enjoy freedom of speech and belief and freedom from fear and want has been proclaimed as the highest aspiration of the common people." So, what are some of the things that we stand for? Well, in Article 1 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it states, "All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood." Article 2. "Everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration, without distinction of any kind, such as race, colour, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth or other status." Now, before I go on, I want you to think about that, because that is the exact opposite of what Islam believes. The declaration goes on, "Furthermore, no distinction should be made on the basis of the political, jurisdictional, or international status of the country or territory to which a person belongs, whether it be independent, trust, non-self-governing, or any other limitation of sovereignty." Article 3 states, "Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person." I should point out here that this was an ideal that the United States Founding Fathers enshrined, but which subsequent governments, especially in the latter days today, have forgotten. Article 4 states, "No one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms." Would someone tell that to the Middle Eastern countries, where slavery is still going on under Islam? Article 5. "No one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment." Would someone tell that to ISIS and other Islamic terrorist groups? Article 6. "Everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law." And Article 7 says, "All are equal before the law, and are entitled without any discrimination to equal protection of the law. All are entitled to equal protection against any discrimination in violation of this declaration, and against any incitement to such discrimination." Would someone tell that to the Australian government? Because we certainly don't have equality before the law now. The only way we can get justice in Australia is if we have enough money. I won't read more of these, because there are quite a few under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but I recommend that everybody read them. Understand your rights, so that when the day comes when we must defend ourselves, and we probably all will have to defend ourselves at some times from the law or from the government, if you know what your rights are, you can stand firm and fight back. And that is what we must do. Stop being sheep. Stop allowing the government to walk all over you. Stop paying their fines and taxes, their illegal fines and taxes. Challenge them. If a council worker comes up to you and says you're not allowed to sit on the grass, challenge him. Ask him, what right does he have to tell you what to do? He is only a private corporation employee. He has absolutely no right to tell you where you may go in public. Now, this happened recently. I was giving out some flyers on the footpath outside a church. And the police came along. No, sorry, a council worker came along and said I couldn't do that. So I challenged him. I said, I am on a public footpath. Where is your right to tell me what I can and cannot do on a public footpath? Well, he looked very confused, and then he realized he didn't have any power. He said, all right, okay, go ahead, but don't walk on any private property. In other words, don't walk into the private property of the church. The fact is, if we don't stand up to these little tyrants, we lose our freedoms. And when you lose a freedom, you lose it forever. Don't let them get away with it. Fight back. Challenge them. I think it's time for another song. This is a great song by Brittany Murphy and Paul Oakenfield called Faster, Pussycat. Oppose us, and I'm talking here about the left-wingers, the socialists, the university students, and those who think they are the intelligentsia of Australia, are a lot closer to us than they realised. I went and had a look at the pages of some of these people who are going to oppose the Reclaim Australia rallies this month, and I was quite surprised to see that they believe in a lot of the things that we do. They are against violence against women, so are we. And that's why we oppose Islam, because Islam is the worst offender against women. Islam stones women to death for adultery. Islam treats women as second-class citizens with only half the value of a man. So, of course we oppose Islam. So it's very strange that the lefties don't. They hate racism. Well, guess what? So do we. But the problem is they don't see that Islam is the most racist ideology of all. Unless you are a Muslim, unless you belong to Islam, you are inferior. The lefties hate corruption in government. Well, guess what? So do we. But their answer is socialism. We believe in democracy and the power of we the people. They are so misguided that they can't even recognize what the real problems are. We need to educate them and help them understand that we are all Australians, that we all face the same problems, so that we can unite as Australians and work together to change the system. The only solution to these problems we face must be political, and the solutions must come from we the people, not through another political ism, like socialism, communism, fascism, etc. They have all failed. When are they going to wake up and realize this? That's all for this week. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
This is the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt, signing off. Until next time, here's a message to Islam. You can try to deny us our freedoms and our rights. You can try to impose your idiotic ideology on us, but you never will, because we believe in freedom, and we will fight you to your death.